This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Place to Be Nation, welcome to another great PTBN Greatest WWE Wrestler Ever Pod Blast, and that is a mouthful, but we got it out, and I am JT, here along with one of the triumvirate that you hear often on the Place to Be podcast, whenever we're breaking down an MSG house show, and that is my man from Canada, Mr. Kelly Nelson. Kelly, how are you?
I'm doing great.
Awesome. Good to talk to you, as always, and obviously you've been with Scott and I now for quite a while, about a year's worth of MSG shows from 85 and 86. And during that time, there's been one guy who's pretty much, I would say, had his peak run during the stretch we've talked about, and that is King Kong Bundy. And on the surface, to me, Bundy isn't a guy I think screams like obvious lock for the top 100, but I do wonder if he's a fringy candidate. And I thought we could talk about it today, because as I mentioned, we have seen pretty much the majority of his biggest matches that happened in his career. Now, he's got a few other ones of note, but as far as his main run on top, we've covered it here on the show so far.
Yeah, well, I mean, he had a ton of memorable moments. I think that's, you know, his strongest attribute or you know, for his case to be in the top 100 would be all the memorable moments he had in the 85, 86, 87 period.
And I mean, a lot bigger matches than many would have seemed, you know, or may have known about. Like for me, watching these MSG shows has been kind of a revelation to learn about the push he got in 85. Like in my mind, just to have seen pay-per-views and, you know, Saturday Smith events and stuff, it seemed like, okay, he showed up in 85, broke the record at Mania, and then got heated up in February of 86. And I didn't realize like all the colossal jostle stuff and everything else where he's positioned as a top guy in the company. You know, in a drawing position in Madison Square Garden month after month, you know, all these colossal jostle main events, whether it's with Andre or in a tag setting. So it's it definitely kind of was more eye-opening to me. And like you said, his moments are plentiful. I mean, WrestleMania 1, he breaks the record for the quickest win, even if it was kayfabed. You know, the stuff with Andre, the Saturday Night event where he destroyed Hogan, WrestleMania 2 in the cage, WrestleMania 3 with the midgets. You know, like that's a bunch of stuff right there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, did you have any other moments that we're missing?
No, I mean, yeah. Did you mention the Saturday Night's main event tag with Hogan and Andre against Stud and Bundy? That was a big one.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, from, like I said, 85 through 87, it was kind of like nonstop big moments. They definitely, you know, Vince definitely liked him a lot and used him against all the big stars. So, yeah, it was an impressive little run.
Yeah, for sure. And you know, a guy that on the surface may not have a lot of great in-ring matches, but, you know, for what he is, like, some of this stuff is pretty good. Like, the matches with Andre, better than they had any right to be. The match with Hogan in the cage of WrestleMania, quite good. Mm-hmm. You know, he has some decent stuff. Even that freaking match with Tony Garea we watched, you know, that was like a fun squash. I mean, he has...
Yep.
Well, they're not high-quality matches. He may have stuff that could get him into that, you know, back end of the 100 based on the moments alone. Like you said, now, you know, you do have to question his versatility. He never really was a face.
No.
Never really did much tag besides some stuff with Stud, which you could argue, I guess, was maybe part of the downtime of his run during this stretch. So I think from a versatility standpoint, he ranks pretty low. I think, you know, kind of jump up that the J and the NJPW system. he has that. He's got some memorable moments. And, you know, he could... I don't know, decent longevity, I guess, you know, 85 through 88, a 3-year run during a hot period. And then the stretch in 94, 95, that's another year. And then you actually unearthed some other interesting information about him, huh?
Yeah. Well, he actually started his career as a wrestler in 1981 as a job guy, believe it or not, because he was still really big at that time.
Right.
Yeah, in 1981 as the original Chris Canyon.
That's funny.
And he also wrestled as Man Mountain Cannon during that time.
Oh, also, it was Man Mountain Rock, and then he, like, you know, had two of the early the names there.
Yeah, and he had a full head of hair at that time, of course, if you've seen him, because he popped up in a lot of other territories after 81. Yeah, like he did a big loop of the South, you know, like Georgia, Texas, Mid-South, Memphis, and kind of it slowly evolved into the look that we're all familiar with. And that's another huge plus for him, is he has like one of the most memorable, all-time memorable looks of any pro wrestler, like WWE, WWF, whatever, or any promotion. Like Bundy, like it's just with the bald head, the huge, you know, physique, the black singlet, like very simple, but it was just so memorable. Like everybody knew who King Kong Bundy was as a kid in the 80s.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, you always hear like, oh, if you ask any non-wrestling fan, blah, 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 you know, you're Hogan, Savage, Warrior, Jake the Snake, but King Kong Bundy may be a sneaky entry where if you at least say the name, you know who he is. I'm not going to say you say name me a wrestler and someone says King Kong Bundy, but I think if you were to say the name King Kong Bundy, I think a lot of people would know that was like, oh, that was a wrestler, you know, just based on his name, and maybe could have an idea of what he looked like. And, you know, the condominium with legs nickname, like that's pretty infamous, the gorilla called him. So, I mean, for nuance, yeah, I mean, decent longevity. I think he had good intangibles. I do. I mean, he had a strong heel presence and charisma that did connect with the crowd. A lot of his matches during the stretch had a palpable buzz to them because of the way he looked and carried himself. And I think that factors into his character work as well. Carried himself as a strong, confident giant of a man. He didn't, you know, some guys are big and wrestle small. Some guys are small and wrestle big. Like he was big and fucking wrestled big. You know, like he came off as he should in that, based on his size and presence.
Yeah, and Gorilla Monsoon often on commentary would compare himself as a wrestler to Bundy, and I think that actually, you know, having seen now a lot of Gorilla Monsoon in the 70s, I think that was a pretty good comparison. I think they were very similar in size, and of course Monsoon was a heel for most of the 60s, big star in the territory in New York, so I think that's a good comparison. As far as, you know, trying to find someone throughout history or in the past that Bundy would compare to favorably.
And, you know, I think a decent promo. Like, he always came across as kind of a smart guy. He wasn't just a grunting big man. Like, he actually spoke pretty intelligently. He sounded pretty intelligent when he did speak. And, you know, it didn't hurt that he had two really good talkers as managers during his stretch there, Jimmy Hart and then Bobby Heenan, more famously, and eventually Ted DiBiase. And I guess that can transition us into his run when he comes back, because I'm curious in your mind if that hurts him. Now, it's about a full year he's there. And, you know, when he's first brought in, he is presented in a way like it seems like he's going to be used at the top of the card. And by the end, he's pretty much a jobber to the stars. And I think maybe what does hurt him in that run is that initial positioning. If he had been brought in like a Nikolai Volkov or one of those other guys that really just came in and were purely there to put other guys over, you could maybe just kind of discredit the run and say, well, you know, whatever. He came in to do the job and help guys get over in a way that's admirable. But he's actually pushed through almost through Mania, because, I mean, he gets the match with Undertaker at Mania, which is his biggest profile match in that run. And it stinks. I mean, it's one of Undertaker's worst. And that's no fault of either guy, really, because what did Bundy have in the tank? You could argue you shouldn't have been even in that position at that time. But, you know, it's on his resume and it hurts. I think, you know, he looked pretty good at, like, a Survivor Series when him and Bigelow were, like, beating the shit out of Lex Luger. Like, that was probably his peak during that run. But he quickly just becomes, you know, just another guy during that stretch after Mania.
Yeah. Well, as we all know, that period for WWF was just, you know, there was a lot of, you know, there just wasn't much direction. And there was a lot of stuff thrown against the wall that just wouldn't stick. And so there was a lot of, you know, just crap going on at that time. So Bundy, you know, maybe in a different, you know, different circumstances, it would have worked out better that second run. But the company was mired in just, you know, that malaise at the time. And it just, so I guess, yeah, him coming back also kind of felt like, well, they're going back to, you know, the 80s. And it was just it wasn't a good time for anybody. I mean, outside of like your Bret Harts and your Shawn Michaels, there just wasn't too much really going on. And he sort of just fit into that mix of, you know, just directionless WWF at the time.
Yeah. And like I said, I don't discredit him too much because of it. It was clearly just kind of a last gasp. You know, how much would you count against him if he stuck around until 89, say, and never came back? You know what I mean? In that last year, it was like that. I don't know. But I do hold that WrestleMania match against him, because that's a pretty high profile match, and I mean, he couldn't even cobble together like a decent brawl. I mean, it's pretty bad. And again, shouldn't have been in the position, but he was. He got the shot, and he could have added to the resume. Instead, he detracted. Anything jump out to you? I have one moment that I want to call out that we didn't talk about, but anything that we haven't discussed as far as a match or moment that you would call out that's worth seeing for Bundy?
Not really. We hit on all the high points. I mean, I love the Saturday Night Main Event angle where he takes out Hogan, hurts Hogan. That's like an all-time great angle, and he was perfect for that role. They built him up really well for the whole year, from WrestleMania 1 to WrestleMania 2, where it was really focused on getting him over and making him a top challenger. And then when he had to do the big angle with Hogan, it was great. Other than that, no, I think we've covered most of it.
One of my kind of sneaky one that's really fun is Survivor Series 87, where it's him, Andre, and gang.
One-man gang.
Yeah, left against Bigelow, and this is the three guys just beating on Bigelow, and then Bigelow makes a comeback. He eliminates gang, eliminates Bundy, and then Andre gets to win. But that's a really fun match, and Bundy plays a big role in that. And I also like the kind of forgotten Saturday's Main Event match, too, in early 88, right before he leaves, where he's used to help set up Andre Hogan. They have that kind of last match, and Andre's got the checkered plaid or whatever it is coat on. But
yes. Yeah.
I liked that one, too. That's a kind of a good late-era Bundy. So,
yeah.
So any final thoughts before we wrap up? Are you going to rank him? What's your initial take on it?
If I do, it would be in the bottom 10. I've never been – it's not like I don't like Bundy, but I've never thought too much of him. But when you do sit back and look at the footage and think about the moments, you know, he was, and when I was a kid, I mean, that was when I first got into wrestling, was when WrestleMania 2 happened and him and Hogan in the cage. And he was one of my first memories. This guy was huge, unbelievable look, and definitely was someone that got me interested in wrestling. Cause he was so huge at the time, figuratively and literally. He was a big part of that, first 80s boom. So, yeah, he definitely is someone to consider for the bottom half of the list anyway.
Yeah, I mean, he's probably one guy that I look at first glance. Like I said, I would have had him out. The more I thought about it, we've talked about it, I may have him in looking, but a guy that I think is fluid. I won't say he's a guy to me. Like when I talked to Aaron George, right, I was like, Marginetti's in my list and I will make room for him. But with King Kong Bundy, to me, that's a guy, like Aaron said, Jannetty was for him, that may shift depending on everyone else around him. So I may find a way to get 100 guys on that aren't King Kong Bundy, and I'm not going to fret about it. You know what I mean? But if Bundy ends up inside the top 100, it would not surprise me, because he does have a lot of the intangibles and the name value behind him and the big moments. I mean, I think he's got a lot of big moments compared to some of the people on this list. I mean, legit good moments that are historically memorable. WrestleMania 1 often gets overlooked, but that was a big one. Like, that still is something that gets talked about. You know, him squashing SD Jones. The cage with Hogan, very memorable. The midgets, very memorable. You know, like, all that stuff is very, very memorable. So, I think he gets a lot of credit there. So, it'll be interesting, but be sure to take part. If you guys want to, help out on a pod blast or a podcast or the project and you're participating, just let us know. Everyone is open to submit a list. You don't have to be part of the Facebook conversation to do so. And, of course, we're also opening anyone that wants to do a written piece for the project. If you're participating in the project and want to do one, we've had a couple run already, to make a case in written form, you are welcome to do that as well. So you'll hear Kelly and me over on the Place to Be podcast, of course. I'm sure we'll be back with more Pod Blast as well. Until then, everyone take care and be sure to participate.